I remember I came home from kindergarten, and I had a birthday crown on my head because I was celebrating my birthday, but I forgot that I wasn't supposed to. I was in kindergarten, and I remember it was like my uncle like making fun of me. I mean, it was a joke, and they were like laughing about it, but like they like pointed it out to me, like, "Oh, you celebrated your birthday," you know. So like at a young age, I definitely like, you know, heard that message, you know, for not celebrating your birthday. That was a total bummer, though.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com.
Veronica, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. Hello.
So I found out about your work through way of one of our former guests, Jillian, who talked about community. And she told me about the work that you are doing around community and vulnerability, which we will get into. And I remember asking her immediately. I was like, can you please introduce her? She sounds like she'd be a fascinating podcast guest, so I have to talk to her. But before we get into all of that, I want to start by asking what I think is a really relevant question, given the nature of your work, and that is, what social group were you a part of in high school, and what impact did that end up having on the choices that you've made throughout your life and your career?
So in high school, I was in concert choir. And before that, though, I got bullied a lot. I remember really desiring community, and I didn't have really close friends up until I joined concert choir. So I think I joined concert choir when I was in like the 10th, you know, maybe the 11th grade, and. But before that I was bullied. So I think that the impact of being bullied, was really helped me find my people and really find or understand where do I belong? Because I was so afraid of, really being myself because I was bullied for being myself growing up. So yeah, that was who I hung out with.
The bullying thing is such a interesting thing for me because, you know, I never saw myself as bullied per se. Like, I definitely knew I was like a nerdy Indian kid in a town with almost no Indian people, but I never interpreted it as being bullied. I thought, okay, I'm not cool the way some of the popular kids are. What do you think that people misunderstand about the experience of being bullied? Is it, you know, a lot of parents are listening to this, and I wonder, you know, what you would say to them. In terms of both, you know, potentially having their kids be the bully, which in a lot of cases they don't know that that's their kid, or their kid being bullied. Because I, you know, as I said, to me, hearing you talk about it, I kind of think, oh, is it, you know, being made fun of for cheap shoes? But, you know, I'd imagine if it's something that you're willing to talk about here, it must have had a pretty significant impact.
Yeah. You know, and I didn't even realize that that had such a big impact on me until later on in my life. But yeah, I think I was bullied from elementary school to middle school to high school. I grew up in a pretty rough neighborhood, and, you know, I went to like pretty rough schools. So, you know, there was just like a lot of, like fighting and things like that happening all the time. So I felt like, yeah, it was just hard for me to find where I belonged. In myself. And I think, you know, I also grew up very religious. So I was my mom is a Jehovah's Witness. So I grew up, you know, having a certain community for a long time and then wanting to branch out and then trying to fit in. It was just like really hard. Like girls were rough. Girls were really, really rough. So, I think I was trying to be myself and I didn't know what that was. And that, I think that really ties into vulnerability and authenticity because, I was afraid of being authentic, right? Was that when I was authentic and I was authentically me, like wearing like, you know, black eyeliner and like heavy you know, just like black clothes. Like I was like into like punk rock and things like that. Like I just got made fun of. So I had to pretend that I was someone else in order to be left alone. So, you know, and I didn't feel really comfortable speaking to my parents about it because I didn't want them to worry about me, or I was afraid of conflict. So that definitely ties into vulnerability, authenticity, like holding back because I was afraid of getting in trouble or taking up too much space or causing conflict. So I hid my feelings and I hid my emotions for a very, very long time because I thought that if I shared myself, then, you know, I would get made fun of or people wouldn't like it. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's such a common experience for so many of us, because even when I talk to people nowadays who I perceive to have been popular, quote unquote, in high school, it's kind of amazing to have that perception shattered and realize they never saw themselves that way and that it was just this constant, you know, battle to fit in, which is so strange because now we live in a world where people get rewarded for standing out. One thing I wonder, you know, I remember watching 13 Reasons Why, the documentary series on Netflix, and, you know, from the people in my generation, they say, oh, you know, kids being made fun of online, whatever, like, grow up, be more thick-skinned, get tougher. But the thing that struck me most, I think, when I saw that was that, you know, they did these outtakes, and I think they had a psychologist on there who said that, you know, what you don't understand, particularly for children at that age, is that the scar of what they're experiencing feels so permanent because of the fact that they've had such limited life experience. And so as a result, the sting on a developing brain is really different than it is for, say, an adult. You know, like, I mean, all of us get made fun of for stupid things we do. I get made fun of by my own parents and my sibling, me and my sister, like for dumb things that, you know, I would probably make fun of my sister too, but they're never mean-spirited.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, having had this experience, I just, you know, I'd be curious to hear your opinion on all of that. And also, you know, what you would want parents here to know about this.
Mm. Yeah, that was such a powerful show, 13 Reasons Why. What I would want parents to know is that it's okay to check in, right? It's okay to ask more questions. So, you know, for me, in my experience, my parents didn't really ask me a lot of questions. Like I kind of created this filter or like this listening for my parents that I was good, right? Or I'm independent and I don't need anyone. So they treated me like that. So, but they didn't really know that deep down I was suffering. And yeah, I think for parents now, if someone is being bullied, their kid is being bullied, or their kid is the bully, right? It's having those real conversations with your kids and with each other, like creating those dynamics in the house, creating better conversations, creating real conversations, checking in, you know, asking like, how was your day? Like how are you really doing? Right. And, inviting those deep, authentic conversations. I mean, and even for kids, I mean, those deeper conversations might feel like a lot, right? But just even checking in, asking questions, being curious, you know, and just really, really making sure that, kids know that, you know, there's a space to be themselves. If it's not at school, at least at home, there's a place to be you.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you grew up very religious, and this is something I always wonder about people who grew up very religious in communities like the ones you did.
Mm-hmm.
What were pros and what were the cons? Because I know there are definitely pros to having these very strong religious communities, community being, of course, one of the big ones. So, you know, one, what were the pros and cons? And two, what impact did that have on the relationship that you have with your parents?
Mm. Actually, I talked about this on my social media the other day. I shared that I grew up a Jehovah's Witness, and the cool part about being a Jehovah's Witness, or, you know, growing up really religious, is that, you know, I did grow up around a lot of community. So I had people that I spent time with, and there was structure, and which I really enjoyed. I love structure. And what was cool about being a Jehovah's Witness at that time, or, you know, just what's cool about being a Jehovah's Witness is they don't celebrate any holidays or birthdays. So holidays and birthdays were never like a big deal to me, right? So I never made a big deal out of those holidays. So I got to actually like spend more time with my family, spend more time with friends. But then that's also a bummer to not do that, for sure. There's also cons to that, but I would say that's a pro. Like, it was pretty cool to grow up in a community. But then the con to it was I didn't get to celebrate holidays, which sucks. which I love now. And my birthday, you know, like I didn't grow up like making my birthday a big deal. So now I make my birthday a huge deal, right? Huge deal.
Yeah.
I love my birthday. And I also love celebrating other people's birthdays. I just love celebrations. They're so fun. But yeah, the con for that, like it was very strict. Like, my life was very limited, so I couldn't do things that other kids were doing. Like, I couldn't eat birthday cake in school, because that was the same thing as celebrating a birthday. So, you know, as a kid, that was kind of hard, you know, and that might have been that was definitely like one of the reasons why I got bullied, because I felt like an outcast, right? Like, I wasn't allowed to do certain things as a kid because of my religion too. So yeah, I felt like an outcast, and you know, I didn't know what was right, what was wrong, what do I really believe in? So, I mean, I stopped going to the church or Kingdom Hall at 13. So I definitely rebelled for a little while after that. But I think structured religion is so interesting. You like see how that has impacted my life. I think I struggled with confidence, so that inspired me to create communities around me, and also, you know, help others cultivate confidence. Yeah.
So I want to come back to the question about the impact that this had on the relationship with their parents. But so literally, the only thing I remember about Jehovah's Witnesses was exactly what you mentioned, because I remember the kid who was a Jehovah's Witness in school, and I remember the not celebrating birthdays thing. This is out of morbid curiosity. Can I ask why? Like, what is there a reason for it?
You know, I really don't know. I don't know the exact reason. I think, from my understanding, it's because it's a worldly holiday, right? So, like, Jehovah's Witnesses didn't celebrate things that the world celebrated, because it was taking the focus and the attention off of what's important, right? Like, that's I think, like, the underneath all of it, that's the reasoning. They didn't like participate in worldly things, like that's what they would say. So yeah, it was a total bummer though. I remember I came home from kindergarten, and I had a birthday crown on my head because I was celebrating my birthday, but I forgot that I wasn't supposed to. Like, I mean, I was in kindergarten, and I remember just like my uncle like making fun of me. I mean, it was a joke, and they were like laughing about it, but like they like pointed it out to me, like, oh, you celebrate your birthday, you know. So like at a young age, I definitely like, you know, heard that message, you know, for not celebrating your birthday. But going back to the question about how yeah. did that impact my relationship with my parents? Yeah, it was actually really hard. My dad isn't a Jehovah's Witness. So my mom is a Jehovah's Witness. My dad's not a Jehovah's Witness. And so that created conflict sometimes. And, you know, when I didn't want to do certain things, or he noticed when I was restricted from doing a lot of things. So that was hard on him to watch. And it was hard on my mom when, you know, I slowly stopped wanting to go. My brother stopped going, and they're older than me. So it was hard on my family because it was like my mom didn't have control. So, you know, there's things that I wanted to do, like, you know, live my life and be a teenager and, you know, go to parties and hang out with different people, you know, because of that religion was like pretty strict. Like you're really supposed to only hang out with Jehovah's Witnesses. So, you know, I wanted to hang out with friends and like, you know, go to parties, whatever. And that's why I stopped going. But yeah, I was like really hard on my mom. It was really hard because she wanted me to be safe, right? And that's what she knows is safe, her religion, right? So that's her community. So yeah, I would say it definitely caused conflict for many years. And then yeah, it wasn't until I got older, you know, when I just started being myself, and you know, just it was clear I wasn't going back, you know, that my mom started to relax. And you know, now we have a great relationship. I have a great relationship with my parents. You know, my parents are still married. You know, she's still a Jehovah's Witness, and my dad is he's not religious at all. So I think they just choose to not talk about religion, which is wild in itself. But yeah, I mean, it was hard growing up, but now we have a pretty great relationship. Yeah.
So maybe what prompted our conversation was when Jillian told me about this event that you created called Vulnerable as Fuck, which I just, right the moment I heard that, I was like, oh, I need to talk to her. This sounds fascinating. Mm-hmm. But what I wonder is, what is the trajectory that actually led to you creating this event and this community? Like, how did you end up doing this of all things?
So vulnerability has been my biggest pain. And I think a lot of us teach the thing that brought us pain, or, you know, like a shadow parts of ourselves. So, you know, I think as I, you know, really dig deeper into why I did this, or why I started Vulnerable as Fuck, was, yeah, like I'm definitely getting bullied and not having my own voice and not knowing like if it was safe to be me, kept me from, you know, like really like figuring out like, who am I? Who do I want to be in the world? And I spent a lot of time in my life like trying to be someone that I wasn't, right? Like trying to like get the perfect job, make a lot of money, you know, work in corporate, be really smart, right? Because like being like a young, attractive girl, growing up was, you know, I got bullied, right? Like, and so I just tried really hard to like, okay, I'm going to be smart. I'm going to not be seen for my looks or my hair or like anything physical about me. I'm going to be really smart. I'm going to be really funny. I'm going to study economics, and I hated economics. So, you know, things like that. I think the thing that led me to what I'm doing now is fear and pain and I didn't belong. I didn't feel like I belonged. So, I was at a time last year, 2019, when I was a part of all these different communities, total extrovert, had a ton of friends, went out, partied a lot, you know, and I would come home and just feel alone. And I had all these friends, but didn't feel close to anyone. And I met a guy, I really liked him, And, you know, long story short, we were seeing each other and, you know, a few weeks later, he stopped answering my text. And I immediately just felt like shit. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Why does this happen to me? Like, you know, I thought this, like, why did this happen to me? You know, feeling like shit. But, and I didn't know who to turn to, right? Because I spent all this time trying to be cool, trying to like look really empowering, you know, like, you know, I like posted on social media, like, oh my God, my life is great, you know, because I was so afraid of sharing authentically, like, hey, I feel like shit, or hey, can I call you right now and can you listen to me? I just need a friend. So when that happened, when that guy stopped texting me and I like, you know, felt sad and I looked through my phone and I had, you know, 4,000 friends on Facebook and never felt the most alone. And it was in that moment when I realized, wow, the reason why I don't have the friends or the connections or the relationships that I want in my life is because I haven't been real, authentic, and vulnerable. Like, it's not them. It's not him. It was me. Like, I haven't reached out to friends and asked them, hey, how are you? Do you want to hang out? Do you want to come over? Do you want to grab dinner? I was afraid of that because I was afraid of intimacy. I was afraid of connection. But I spent so much time, you know, keeping people at arm's length from me. So I was feeling vulnerable as fuck. I just wanted real conversations. I just wanted to like honestly vent about what I was feeling and what I was dealing with. And, you know, I just messaged a few friends and I asked them if they wanted to get dinner. And I called it vulnerable as fuck. And I planned on like leading some intentional, deeper conversations. And then it turned into an event series. You know, it turned from 6 people at a dinner table to 40 people at a workshop. So yeah, I just became obsessed with it. I became obsessed with facilitation, became obsessed with connection, intimacy, communication, leadership. Yeah, that's been my, it's like my personal journey has turned into my professional journey. Mm-hmm. So,
it's funny to hear you talk about, you know, a guy who stops texting you, because I think I've been on the receiving end of those similar sort of ghosting situations. And it is one of those things that just, it does such a you know, number on your self-esteem, because you begin to wonder what's wrong with me, like why in the world did this happen? All the things that you experienced, I definitely have felt firsthand. So there are a couple of things that I wonder about this, because, you know, for people listening, we attempted to re-record this once, and I know we talked about sort of a framework that we'll actually get into. Mm-hmm. But I think that the place that I want to start it is looking at this through the lens of gender, because I feel like it's so different for men and women. And, you know, I think that there are certain moments in my life, like I remember once crying in front of a girl, and after that she broke up with me like 2 days later. And right after that, I was like, I'm never going to cry in front of another girl again. Because I literally connected the dots with, oh, in my mind, that's what led to the breakup. I look weak. And I think that I'm not alone as a guy to feel that, oh, there's this sort of like there's like a level of vulnerability that we'll allow, and there's a level where we're like, no, that's going to be perceived as weak. And I don't think I'm alone in that. I think that's very common for guys. So one, you know, what do you have to say to that? And then two, you know, at these events, and I think I asked you this question before, what have you noticed as the difference between the way that women are vulnerable and the way that men are vulnerable?
Ooh, it's a good one. Yeah, like I really feel you on that. With wow, when when you cried in front of this girl, she stopped texting or she stopped seeing you, and you made it mean, wow, I'm never crying in front of anybody again. Yeah, there's this expectation on men for sure to be strong, masculine, like Superman, like the superhero persona. And women too, women on the other end of it too, right? I mean, women have, I think there's more of a, there's permission, right? Or expectation for women. Oh, she's sensitive. But yeah, there's a lot of freaking pressure on men to be strong and to not look weak. And there's not enough permission for men to be themselves, share, cry. You know, I think the level of sharing, I don't know if there's a difference. There is a, I mean, there is a difference for sure, right? Like there's this, I did a workshop with a friend of mine, Michael Bates. He's a men's coach and he's an intimacy coach and he works with men. And we actually did a Vulnerable AF workshop and called it Ballad of the Sexes. And the conversation was about what changes when men and women are vulnerable with each other? Is there a difference? And we split up the men and we did a workshop together and then we split up the men, we split up the women, and then we brought the men and women back together. And we, you know, just asked if they noticed a difference. And yeah, there was a difference. Like there was a difference in the room, different in the space. You know, it's like when women walked in the room, the men needed to protect and like this is what I heard, the feedback that I got, but the men needed to like protect and you know, look a certain way, like look strong, right? Because there's this messaging that men get growing up that, you know, don't be a baby. Mm-hmm. Don't cry. Or don't be a pussy, right? My dad said that to my brother all the time. And I actually, I remember my brother crying all the time and it would be really hard for him because my dad would be like, don't be a baby. You're such a crybaby. And it would drive my brother crazy. And I used to say that my brother is really sensitive. I used to be like, oh, Eric, you know, my brother Eric, he's so sensitive. And I stopped saying that now because my brother feels a lot. It's not that he's sensitive. He's just, he feels his feelings. He feels his emotions. And I think it's beautiful. I think it's incredible. Like all of us, men, women, there needs to be, you need to release pain, trauma, in whatever way it looks like. If it's screaming, if it's jumping around, if it's, you know, taking a breath, you know, all of it comes out differently. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I just like, that would be, I remember if I ever got to ask, you know, Brené Brown a question, it would be like, yeah, Brené, whatever, like, you're not a guy. That would be my response to her. But it's kind of amazing we talk about feeling feelings because I think that, in all honesty, has taken me a lot of work and it's a balancing act too. I mean, you know, to some degree, you're a public figure, as am I. And, you know, I've learned this in a way that I haven't before, particularly in the wake of this Netflix documentary that I was in that like millions of people have now seen, apparently. You know, what I wonder is, you know, and I think this kind of makes a perfect segue to talking about what we were talking about last time, is this sort of fine line between vulnerability and train wreck. You know, people on Facebook, and I'm guilty of this, I've seen it, where they, you know, of using their audience as their therapists, of, you know, not really, there's sort of this fine line of, okay, maybe this isn't meant for public consumption. I only know this because I nearly ran a business into the ground with, you know, like oversharing. It was kind of like, this is inappropriate. And I think the thing that happens, you know, particularly if you're a public figure, is that more and more you begin to see that how I show up in the world shapes the perception people have of me. But not only that, it shapes the perception people have of all the people who surround me, whether that's, you know, investors, editors, publishers, agents, teammates, whoever it is. Because if you're in the public eye, everything you do is a reflection on everybody else that surrounds you. And you are too now, probably in a bigger way than you imagine being. So I wonder, what impact has that had on your own ability to be vulnerable? Become known.
So good. I shared something about this on my social media the other day, vulnerability versus oversharing.
Yeah.
And calculated vulnerability versus authenticity. And in my work, right, I talk about vulnerability. I have to be vulnerable, right? Or I have to share. You know, I can't walk around and just like pretend that, you know, I'm good and I don't need to do anything, right? Or even when I lead workshops, I need to share the most vulnerable thing, right? Because it makes other people feel safe around me, right? And yeah, there is a difference of calculated vulnerability. Like calculated vulnerability is like this desired outcome. Like I'm going to share something. I'm going to share this deep, deep, dark secret in order to get something from you, right? Or in order to like open you up, or, you know, there's that. And then there's authenticity, which is sharing to actually develop a heartfelt connection, right? And often, and vulnerability versus oversharing. Oversharing, I see that all the time, right? I do it myself also in conversation sometimes, right? It's just an awareness and learning how to develop a practice and awareness for it. Like, yeah, sometimes I overshare. And when I'm in a conversation with someone, I get really excited. I go really deep. Like I tell my friends to get the scuba gear when they're talking to me sometimes, because we go really deep. And sometimes not everyone is available for your vulnerability, right? Not everyone deserves your vulnerability. So yeah, I do have to talk. I have to talk, I have to share on my social media and my workshops, right? But I'm mindful of what I share. I only share with people I really trust. And there's intention, like there has to be intention behind the share, right? Like there's questions to ask yourself. And I've gotten this from Brené Brown. There's, before you share something vulnerable, ask yourself, why am I sharing this? Is this person a trusted friend? Am I crossing any boundaries by sharing this? And is this person in the right place to hear me? Right? Or am I sharing this to get sympathy? Some people, I see that. Some people share these like really, really, really vulnerable things constantly on Instagram or Facebook. And it's beautiful, right? And, you know, there's like something else at the end, like I'm sharing something really vulnerable and buy my program.
Exactly.
Right? Like, you know, and I mean, I hear it all the time. Like I hear it in the coaching industry, like be vulnerable. And yeah, vulnerability is mutual. It's a tool, and it's a quality that develops connection, and it's a gateway to intimacy and connection. Right. And some people use it and abuse it, and those people that do use it and abuse it, or, you know, or use it in a calculated way, for me, I see it. I feel it. I notice it. Probably I can tell, like you can just tell sometimes. And Yeah. And it's also a practice. It's an awareness to just build the muscle. Sometimes I just talk a lot. Like I'm probably talking a lot right now. And it's just a muscle to be aware of and to practice and notice in your sharing when you're talking to others.
I appreciate that you brought up people using it as a tactic. I actually had a piece that I started writing about vulnerability. It's not a marketing tactic. I don't think I've ever published it because I couldn't flush out all my thoughts. Maybe after this conversation, I'll have to say about that. But one of the things that I wonder, and I know I asked you this before when we attempted to do this the first time, is what has surprised you that people have shared, but more importantly, both men and women, what has surprised them about the things that they were afraid to share, but they ended up sharing?
What surprised them? I remember this guy came to Vulnerable AF one, or a couple of times, came a lot actually. And the first time he came, I remember he said, he's like, I thought that I was going to come here and just talk about all the shitty things about myself. All the shitty parts of myself that I didn't like. And then I actually feel so much more lighter and connected to myself. And I actually learned to love those parts of me that I didn't love before. So people get, people share a ton of things. They talk about being gay, questioning their sexuality, not loving themselves, not loving those parts of them that they didn't realize were one of their greatest strengths. So, and that's the beauty of vulnerability is it's not sharing in order to fix something or to get something. It's sharing something because it develops connection, right? And it's saying, yeah, me too. Not like, oh my God, me too. Like, let me help you. And I know, let me fix you. Let me change you, right? It's like, yeah, I freaking...
That's the problem with having friends or coaches. Like 90% of the time, you don't get somebody who listens. You get people who offer solutions.
Well, that's why it's really, really important to talk about boundaries, give agreements. I even say this. I have friends that are coach. I have a ton of friends who are coaches, and I say this when I ask for help or when I call a friend. I say, hey, I really want to, can I share something with you? But I just want you to listen. I don't want any coaching or advice. And then some people are like, yeah. Or, you start developing relationships that, where you get to share and then your friends know you and they know that they can listen to you and they say, do you want me to just listen or do you want my advice?
Yeah, it's just funny how you have to preface that with friends who are coaches because I think they're that they can't take it off.
Yeah,
there was one example that you gave me last time that you didn't bring up, but if you don't mind, I want to revisit it because it struck me as particular. You mentioned, and the reason I think this struck me in particular was because I related to it. Like you mentioned, there's a guy who was like in his mid 20s who got up in front of a room and told people that he was still a virgin, and I can tell you this as somebody who lost my virginity much later than most people do. I felt so self-conscious about it. It was like the bane of my existence for years. And so when I heard the idea of somebody getting up in front of a room, particularly full of women, and saying that, I thought, God, that sounds horrifying. What was the experience of that for him? And what was the response from the people in the room?
Yeah. So I remember that conversation. I always set agreements in every workshop, and one of the agreements is no coaching, no advice unless it's requested. So, and we're practicing listening. So when someone shares something like that, that's really, or if someone shares anything, the agreement is to just listen and you know, not, so no one said anything. But in the group, or at the end of the workshop, a bunch of people thanked him for sharing. Like, thank you for sharing that. It actually makes me feel so much more free to not have to have sex with anyone. Because you shared that, I feel just closer to you. Like, I remember someone said, I feel closer to you, and you give me permission to not have to have sex with people that I don't want to have sex with. Yeah, that was the response.
I guess that one in particular struck me, because I think for so many guys, I'm totally finally disconnected. Like, you know, validation from females, particularly in the form of sex, is very, very directly tied to their sense of self-worth. Mm. And that's why I think that example struck me so much, because for a really long time, you know, I mean, probably even as late as last year, I got so much of my self-worth from validation from women.
Mm.
It's a good foundation for any relationship, let alone an intimate one.
Yeah, it's a big one. It's a big one. Yeah. It's like, wow, if I share this with you, will you still love me? Will you still find me attractive? Right. It's like,
yeah. Yeah. It's when I dated girls who were extremely attractive, like, I was a total late bloomer. And, you know, there are moments when I'm like, wow, I'm intimidated by your dating history. You were actually cool. I mean, and now you're dating me. It was the strangest thing to me that I'm like, wait a minute, you're dating me, but I'm insecure about the people that you've dated in your past. Why?
Yeah. It's like all of this, these stories that we create about ourselves because of the things that we think we should be doing, or the things that we think define us. Right. Yeah. And sexuality is a huge deal. And it's scary to share that in front of women. Right. And it's also freaking.
Yeah. You know, I was the guy who powerful. Never went to school prom. And, you know, so it's like, you date a girl who attracts. It's like, oh, of course you had a date for the prom. I'm like, I'm the guy who didn't even go to the prom.
Yeah. So
did you ever think dating me, isn't this a downgrade from what you're used to? But all joking aside, it was really weird that something like that could make me feel that insecure.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. There's like, you know, and I'm sure that on the other side of it, people will probably see you and say, what do you mean? Like, you're successful. You have this podcast. You have this going on. You're a surfer. You're a skier. Like, you know, we think that people think things about us. Meanwhile, they actually think the complete opposite. Yeah. Yeah. When I tell people that, you know, I'm really insecure about my look sometimes. I'm really insecure about speaking. I'm actually really insecure about speaking. And I cannot believe, I was talking to a friend about this the other day. If someone would have told me 4 years ago that I would start teaching people how to lead workshops, I would literally laugh in their face. Like, I couldn't even look people in the eye when I spoke to people, because I was so insecure about myself. I was like awkward, and I have an Adam's apple, and I was afraid of people seeing my Adam's apple because I got bullied as a kid, and they told me that. Or like, you know, like they were like, they made fun of me and said that I was a guy or I was a boy. So like, I had these insecurities about myself, and people actually, when I say I'm insecure sometimes, like, you know, or I'm self-conscious, people would be like, really? I never thought that. I actually thought that you were, you know, like really, really confident, or you put off, you have this persona that you're super confident all the time, that you're a good speaker and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, really? So yeah, it's, you know, it's being ballsy to just share that, because people can just relate more than anything.
I mean, I think the funniest thing, and I probably shared this one before, somebody thought, you know, that because of Unmistakable Creative, I must be the most self-actualized human being in the world. I was like, that's ridiculous. You know, so you mentioned two of the agreement, or I'm not sure if you mentioned all four of them, but just for the sake of you know, bringing this full circle, what were what you call the four agreements? Obviously, the first one was, you know, no coaching and just listening. Like, what were the four?
Mm-hmm. So no coaching, no advice, confidentiality. So everything that's said in the room stays in the room. Everything like exercises that we do, if they share that with people, that's okay. But if someone shares something personal, no sharing it with anybody outside. Boundaries. So we're respectful of each other's boundaries, including our own boundaries. Meaning if you need to go outside and sit on the grass for the entire workshop, go for it. Like, I invite everyone to honor themselves and lean into their edge. And if you're feeling an edge that you don't want to lean into, you don't have to do it. So that's another agreement. And presence, being present. Present, leave your resume outside. You know, practice being really present with people. So yeah, those are the agreements.
Well, I have one final question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews at the Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Someone who is unmistakable is a person who is being themselves, someone who is a badass, living life on their own terms and figuring it out along the way.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story and your insights with our listeners. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and everything that you're up to?
Yeah, thank you for having me again. This is amazing. I loved our conversation. People can find me, or you can find me on my website, so veronicacolinas.com. You can find me on, I'm very active on social media, so Instagram, Facebook. On my website, you can find upcoming Vulnerable AF workshops. I do them online now, and I am doing some in-person events. I have people leading Vulnerable AF in New York and in other parts of the world, like Canada. I'm leading them now in Bali. So very small events, but doing a lot of online stuff. So you can find me online, and where else would you find me? Yeah, those are the best ways to find me.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.